not my theme. Tom, you've done it again.
Why, it's Peter Gunn.
I'm glad it's Peter Gunn. Tonight's show is Peter Sellers. Look down at your sheet. What does it say there?
You're right.
Sellers.
Sorry. Okay.
That's better. One day, we will get it right. Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, a half an hour program of comedy presented Friday nights here on KCRW, except for the second Friday of every month when we have the Santa Monica Chamber Music Concert. And as I said, yes, this is a program of the comedy records of Peter Sellers. We've all seen Peter Sellers in films and know what a talented actor he was, and brilliant. Man had a great ear. I think if there was ever anyone who could have presented the 200 accents of the British Isles for us, it would have been Peter Sellers. And he made quite a few very interesting records in England, and I hope to be able to present a wide range of those tonight, beginning with a takeoff that he did on the American genre of the travelogue film. And this is called Balham, Gateway to the South.
Balham, Gateway to the South. We enter Balham through the verdant grasslands of Battersea Park, and at once we are aware that here is a land of happy, contented people who go about their daily tasks in truly democratic spirit. This is busy High Street, focal point of the town's activities. Note the quaint old stores whose frontage is covered with hand-painted inscriptions, every one a rare example of native Balham art. Let us read some of them as our camera travels past.
Cooking apples, choice eaters.
A song to remember at the Tandemount Cinema.
A suit to remember at Montague Moth.
Promotions conducted with decorum and taste.
Fight tonight, bring your own paper. Rally Thursday, Berkeley Square. Viscountess Lewisham and Mrs. Gerald Legg. Up the ruling classes.
This shows the manifold activities of Balham's thriving community. But in quiet corners, we still find examples of the exquisite workmanship that Balham craftsmen have made world famous. Toothbrush holesmanship.
On my forge, I carve the little holes in the top of toothbrushes. It is exciting work, and my forefathers have been engaged upon it since 1957. The little holes in the top are put in manually, or in other words, once a year. I recently had the honor of demonstrating my craft before the owner of ice. He stopped by one day for a couple of words. I did not understand either of them.
So much for Balham's industries. Now let us see a little more of the town. Here is the great park covering nearly half an acre. This is where the children traditionally meet by the limpid waters of the old drinking fountain. A drinking fountain that has for countless years across the vast aeons of time give an untold pleasure to man, woman, and child. Beside this fountain, donated by able counselor Quills as long ago as 1928, the little ones sit around a trim nursemaid and listen spellbound and enchanted as she reads them a story.
With one bound, he was by her side. Nora felt his hot breath on her cheek as he ripped the thin silk from...
We are now entering Old Balham. Time has passed by this remote corner. So shall we. But Balham is not neglecting the cultural side. This is Eugene Quills, whose weekly recitals are attended by a vast concord of people. He has never had a lesson in his life. Such is the enthusiasm of Balham's music lovers that they are subscribing to a fund to send Eugene to Italy or Vienna or anywhere. Night falls on Balham. From Quill's Folly, Balham's famous beauty spot, which stands nearly 10 feet above sea level, the town is spread below us in a fairyland of glittering lights, changing all the time. Green, amber, red, red and amber, and back to green. The nightlife is awakening. The El Morocco Tea Room.
Yes, what do you want?
Pilchards.
They're off, dear.
Baked beans?
Off.
Oh, meatloaf salad?
That's off, too.
Pot of tea?
No tea, dear.
Or just milk, then?
Milk's off.
Roll and butter, then?
No butter, dear.
Oh, just a roll.
Only bread, love.
I might have just as well have stayed at home.
Well, I don't know. It does you good to have a fling occasionally.
And so the long night draws on. The last stragglers make their way home, and the lights go out one by one as dawn approaches and the bell of St. Quill's Parish Church tolls 10 o'clock. Balham sleeps. And so we say farewell to this historic borough with many pleasant memories. And the words of C. Quill Smith, Balham's own bard, burning in our ears.
Broad-bosomed, bold, becalmed, benign, lies Balham, four square, on the northern line. Matched by no marvel save in eastern scene, a rose-red city, half as gold as green. By country churchyard, ferny fen, and muir, what Quill's mute, inglorious, lies buried here? Oh, stands the church clock at 10 to 3, and is there honey still for tea?
Honey's off, dear. Hello, children. Here is your music for today.
That's nice.
Well, you know what to do, children. Here is your music for running out of the kitchen. Off you go into the lounge, right up to Mummy. Has she got her back to you? Then out with your Robin Hood sword and plunge it into Mummy's back. With a 1, 2, 3, here is your stabbing music. Now come along, no lazing. Just jump over Mummy, because it's time for our good deed. Saving Grandpa the bother of chopping the firewood. Have you got your little hatchets ready? Good. And here is Uncle Rotter to sing for you.
Sharpen the hatchet and run up the stairs, hide beneath the bed now. 1, 2, diddly do, and off with Grandpa's head now.
All right, Bill?
Yes. There, now never mind the mess, because it was such fun, wasn't it? And now, off to find Grandma. There she is, hanging from a beam in the kitchen. Oh, I forgot. We showed her our Roy Rogers lasso yesterday, didn't we? Never mind. Give her a push and we...
Swing a white hood, a grandma waltz with a 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
But wait. Oh, here comes Daddy up the front path. Wouldn't it be lovely to have two daddies? Well, we can arrange that. Got your little exercise hatchets? Then it's
up on a chair behind a door. Hey, diddle, diddle. Here comes Papa, so up with your chopper and split him down the middle.
Now, children, just one last exercise. Take Daddy's keys out of his pocket. Run to his desk. Take out all his money, his bank books, and those stupid old stocks and shares. And hurry along to the Auntie Rotter Home for Orphans, Balls Pond Road, London. Bye-bye, children.
Ta-da, children.
This is a story about an old boy who's on tour. He's well past it. And he's on tour up north with a show. And he decides to go into a pub for a drink that morning. And he goes into the pub and he says to the landlord, he said, "Good morning, landlord. My name is Warrington Minge. I am appearing in the new play at the Hippodrome, Tomorrow's New Yesterday. And I was wondering if you could oblige me. I'll have a large Remy Martin, please, by cashing this small check."
He said, "I'm sorry, sir, have you not seen the notice?"
He said, "What notice are you referring to?" "No checks cashed for theatrical." "Ah, no," he said, "I didn't notice that, I must admit, no. Make that lemonade shandy, I'll have a lemonade shandy, I think, and I'll call back for the Remy Martin." So he goes out of the pub into the butcher shop down the road. He said, "Good afternoon, Master Butcher. What a fine hygienic establishment you have here. All meat under cover, free from contamination by flies and other pests. My name is Warrington Minge. I am appearing at the Theatre Royal in a new play entitled Tomorrow's New Yesterday, and I was wondering whether you could oblige me with a few chops and a liver or something like that. This small check I have here, by cashing this..."
He said, "I'm sorry, sir. You see, I'm not the owner here, but the owner was once taken on very badly by a theatrical."
He said, "No, don't bother to go into the..." No, it's all right, no. "If you can prepare a lean chop, I'll call back for it later." Tries about five other shops, ending up at a joint Chinese laundry at the end of the street. Goes into the Chinese laundry, and they come out. He said, "What a fine race of people, the Chinese. Many years I spent in your fine country in repertory in Singapore, I remember, yes. My name is Warrington Minge. I am appearing in a new play at the Theatre Royal entitled Tomorrow's New Yesterday. And I was wondering whether you could oblige me by cashing this small check."
He said, "Oh, so sorry, sir. We now cash check for theatricals."
He said, "Then would you mind pressing the bloody thing?"
Begin as soon as you like, please, would you?
I beg your pardon?
Would you start as soon as you can, please? We're in a hurry. We have a lot of people to see.
Right. I prepared... can you hear me?
Yes.
I prepared a short extract from the Richard III soliloquy, which I do for you, because if you don't mind, I won't read the script. My eyesight is not all as good as it is, and I like time to pore over it. So if I do this, my memory isn't also what it was. However, I do remember some of it. And,
be as quick as you can, would you please?
"And now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer."
God, not another one.
So sorry. Glorious summer by the sun of York.
And it's very interesting. Idiots coming along here, don't you? Don't blame me, dear. It's not my fault. Oh, you've forgotten it all now.
Mary, now are our brow. What was it? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I thought you were talking.
Hello. Who, Pinky?
Now are our brow.
No, he's not here. Who is it? Oh, hello, darling. How are you?
Yeah,
we're just watching some auditions.
Hung up for monument.
Oh, some old idiot. Yes, he's sitting right next to me.
Yeah. to merry meeting.
Oh, I shall not wait until it's performed.
Dreadful march.
Yes, all right. See you later, Dan. Bye. Bye. By the way, was that the girl any good? Oh, not bad, yes. I don't think she was.
Grim visaged war.
Quite right,
has fooled his wrinkled front.
It's funny, I thought she had right sort of appearance and everything. I think I'll have a word with her later.
To fright the soul.
But of course.
Careful adversary. He capers nimbly in milady's chamber.
Sure wasn't too good.
A volute.
Well, I didn't think it would run anyway.
But I, that am not shaped for sporty tricks.
I think it'll probably be off in a few nights.
An amorous looking glass.
Well, I would never put it on anyway.
That am rudely stamped.
What is your name, please? Your name?
Yes, a Minge. Warrington Minge.
Oh, well, we'll let you know.
Well, I have left my address with the...
Thank you.
The stage door.
Oh.
What?
Get him out of here.
You will let me know. Thank
we
you.
Will let you know.
I'm so sorry about
that. Thank you. Very nice of you.
My memory is not all that it was.
You
will get in touch. What? Tell me one thing. Was it all right apart from the dries?
Yes, it was very good apart from the dries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can we have the next, please? The next, please. We haven't very much time now. Come along.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, a typical musician's story, and this is probably true, it's probably based on fact, is about a fellow who came up to a very well-known friend of ours, Alan Clare, pianist.
Marvelous pianist, yeah.
And said, I say, would you play That's What You Are? So Alan said, I'm sorry, I don't know what That's What You Are. I'll have a look through the book. So he had a look through the book a bit quickly. And this chap was sort of dancing around the very tall girl, and he came back and he said, I say, there's a drinky poo in it for you, you know? and he came back. And he said, piano player. And kettle drummer. I was known as a kettle drummer. I don't know why. You never used to play a kettle, but it comes from timpani, you see. He said, aren't you going to play That's What You Are? So Alan said, I'd love to play That's What You Are, but I don't know how it goes. He said, good God. He said, what is the country coming to? He said, I never thought I'd reach the day when somebody didn't know That's What You Are. He said, well, if you sing it, I'll try. He said, it goes like this. Unforgettable. Yes.
You can't win. I've got it. I've been practicing rather hard since I last spoke to you, but now I've got something that really is. Just hear for yourself. I've got a clock that wakes me every morning for my train. I've got a corn that gives me warning when it's going to rain. I've had a dream that's coming true. I've got a sweetie in view. I'm as happy as I could be, 'cause I've fallen in love with the girl you see. I haven't told her, hasn't told me, but we know it just the same. Saturday night on her settee, oh, what a time there's going to be. I haven't told her, she hasn't told me, but we know it just the same. She still calls me mister, but she won't, I know she won't, after I've kissed her. I've got an idea, soon there'll be one little, two little, possibly three. I haven't told her, she hasn't told me, but we know it just the same. 70 years ago, long before the days of the wireless and the kinematograph entertainment, we young lads had to make our own amusements. Such games as stoning the lamplighter and tripping the muffin man provided harmless outlets for the release of our boyish energy. But the most popular of all our escapades was undoubtedly the one called, quite simply, setting fire to the policeman.
Now, this risky operation was invariably carried out at night, since darkness made it less likely that we would be recognized, and at the same time lent dramatic emphasis to the spectacle of the flaming Bobby. There were several alternative methods and variations used in perpetrating this jape, but I will confine myself to describing the standard procedure we usually employed. Three carefree young limbs would sally forth of an evening, each one knowing by heart what he had to do. One lad, selected for his fleetness of foot, would be wearing plimsolls. Another, chosen for his golden ringlets and generally angelic appearance, would be clad in a velvet suit. Whilst the third, the strong man of the party, would be carrying a packet of lucifers and an enormous bucket which was half filled with kerosene. The time of the rendezvous with the previously selected but unsuspecting constable, incidentally always a man noted for his good nature and kindness to children, it was planned to the split second. And it was so arranged that the encounter took place in the darkest portion of some ill-lit street. On arrival at the appointed place, the team would spring into action like clockwork. Pretending to blubber, do you see, the velvet-clad cherub would approach the officer and murmur, rather inaudibly through his sobs, that he was lost. Whereupon the worthy custodian of the law would kneel or bend down in order to make out what the pathetic infant was saying. Now then, at this precise moment, the bearer of the kerosene-filled bucket would swiftly emerge from the shadows and empty the entire contents of his utensil over the peeler. Then, like lightning, a lucifer was produced, struck, run along the hem of the blue tunic, and hey presto, yet another policeman in a state of combustion. Well done, lads. However, there's no time to be lost in self-congratulation. The fire brigade must be summoned before the constable can sustain any serious burns. So off like the wind goes our young runner to the nearest fire station, his twinkling plimsolls barely touching the pavement as he speeds on his errand of mercy. Before long, the exciting sound of the horse-drawn fire appliance can be heard in the distance, growing louder every second. Now, this sound, unfortunately, is something that is no longer to be heard nowadays. Pity. It's true the bell still rings, but where is the heavy rumble of the wheels, jingling of the harness, crack of the whip, clatter of the hooves, the snorting and the panting of the horses? Oh, they were sounds to stir the blood. Gone, alas, forever. And gone with them, half the fun of the fire. But I digress. Our policeman is by now well and truly alight. See how he lights up the dingy street for yards around. Frantically, he blows his whistle and flails himself about the body with his truncheon in a vain attempt to put out the flames. A knot of eager spectators has now gathered, and many a coarse jibe and ribald comment will be made at the expense of the luckless limb of the law. Perhaps a wag in the crowd will cry out something like, "Policemen should keep cool at all times," or an elderly slattern reeking of intoxicants may be heard to shriek, "Smoking on duty, that's what he's a-doing. Ought to have the law on him, that's what." Each sally being greeted by a general burst of merriment from the assembled bystanders. The policeman's plight would seem to be desperate, but help is close at hand. The fire appliance draws up with great commotion, and the nimble firemen leap into action. There is no time to find a hydrant, and the hand pump is operated at once from the emergency barrel, which was always carried. Whilst his perspiring comrades pump valiantly, one brave fellow takes the hose and gets as near to the incandescent officer as the heat of the flames will allow. The flow of water is released, and the stream is directed point-blank at the target. Much too soon, it's all over, and there is nothing to look at save a charred and saturated object, scarcely recognizable as a human being, lying on the pavement. The sightseers, their holiday mood gone, begin to disperse in silence and go about their business. Sometimes, before they went, one of their number would make a collection on behalf of the gallant little lad who had the presence of mind to run to the fire station. On these days, it was three tired but very happy youngsters who trudged with their golden sovereigns and half-sovereigns, jingling in their pockets, very pleased with their evening's work, and after all, who can blame them? All this, as I say, took place more than 70 years ago. But even today, whenever I see a policeman, I'm still gripped by an almost insane desire to set fire to him.
I am fed up with this Church of St. Enery. With all them stamps, what is the plaques and cups and knives and forks? With this Churchill face on them. Churchill with his brandy and his cigars and his painting and his rotten painting. Hitler, there was a painter for you. Could paint an entire apartment, two coats, one afternoon. Churchill. Hitler told funnier jokes than Churchill. He had more hair than Churchill. And he could dance the pants of old Churchill. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Winston.
Winston who?
Ah, you have forgotten about him already, you see.
You are the promised kiss of springtime. What makes the lonely winter seem long? You are the breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights a star. The dearest things I know are what you are. Someday my happy arms will hold you, and someday I'll know that moment divine when all the things you are. Promise kiss of springtime that makes the love.
Here, Dad, how much longer you gonna be in that bathroom?
Oh, blimey, you can't get a shaving piece in this house. Oh. Lonely winter. Low.
Oh, there's something so sweet about that. I just love it. Well, that's tonight's episode of Funny Stuff, a half-an-hour digest of the best of the records of Peter Sellers. Rest assured that for every piece I included, there were two I just didn't have time for that are of equal quality. Sellers' death in 1980 was indeed a tragic loss to the world of comedy. Of historical interest is the fact that most of the recordings we heard tonight were produced by George Martin before he went on to produce The Beatles. Those of you who saw the listing for tonight's show in the program guide may have noticed that we promised you Irene Handel, but in going over these records, I decided to give the routines with Sellers and Irene Handel a show all their own, and that'll be the first one in June. Speaking of future programs, we'll be preempted next week, but the following Friday night, we'll have a program of the best of the early improv groups with The Committee and The Premise and Second City, featuring some people that you went on to hear of. And that'll about do it for tonight. This is your host, Bob Claster, reminding you to keep your sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.
Moment you've been waiting for. Listen to the voice in a million as Peter Sellers sings George Gershwin.
George Gershwin.